Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Aibo! Aibo! Knockout!
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, what if I told you how you could be miserable for the rest of your life? How for the rest of your life you could be miserable?
I'd say, how about you tell me something I don't know?
Well, I know you. You don't have a miserable life, but you've been through some times of misery, haven't you?
I think everybody has.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. 888-914-9149. There's a line or two open. 888-914-9149. Okay, Cyrus, I'm going to help you real good here. I want you to listen to this. I know you heard it, but we're going to pretend that we're hearing it for the first time. Okay. This is a presentation on the YouTubes, and you're going to post this, right?
I will.
Okay, how to be miserable for the rest of your life. It's self-explanatory, and parents, first of all, when I saw this, I have kids ranging in age from 21 to 41. The gamut. Six boys, five girls. So they're all adults now. But I fired this off to all of them. When I watched this yesterday, I thought, this is the same thing. Do it. Send it.
When I watch this,
your kids will give you that look.
This is perfect. Everyone should hear this.
Everyone should hear it. And everyone's going to hear it in just a minute. The whole country's going to hear it in just a minute. So yeah, I sent this to all my kids. No heat, no judgment. But take from this what you will, and take from this what you should. And if you really want to sock it to, you know, some people in your life who are just messing up and it's their own darn fault, send them this audio clip, How to Be Miserable for the Rest of Your Life.
Here's a quick tutorial on how to be miserable for the rest of your life. Step 1. Wake up whenever you want to. Don't wake up at a reasonable hour, an hour that makes you feel good about yourself. Make sure you wake up when everyone has had a head start to the day. You really want to make sure you feel like you've missed any chance to start your day off on the right foot. And when you get out of bed, don't make your bed. And don't shower. Just wear whatever you wore yesterday and head downstairs. It's important that you start the day off with little to no self-respect, feeling as grimy as possible.
Fact. That is a great way.
Do you speak from experience?
Yeah, I do. My 20s were a total waste. Total waste of time.
I'm thinking of all the gamer dudes.
Yep.
You know, who just roll out of bed and go to the console. I don't know, but
That's exactly right.
That's the first one. Okay, let's continue.
Step 2. Make sure your house is always a complete disaster. Your house is filled with many rooms, each with a specific purpose. You want to make sure that it's extremely difficult to accomplish those purposes. The pigsty will also help subconsciously reinforce the idea that you're a disorganized person whose life is not in order. This is an extremely important belief to have when trying to remain miserable. Step 3. Procrastinate. When the thought dawns on you to do something productive, like clean your disgusting kitchen, just ignore that feeling. After all, you just woke up, and you have so much time later in the day to get that done. You want to get in the habit of delegating all your life's problems to the future version of yourself, who will probably have a lot more motivation and energy than you do right now.
Cyrus, since you are now the future version of yourself, say 20 years ago, are you happy with the future version compared to the 20 year ago version of you?
I can't believe I'm standing here based on the 20 year old version of me. Like, none of this is, this doesn't even seem possible. So there's hope for everyone.
So future Cyrus is good.
Yeah. I love this. My wife and I will joke about, you know, oh, should we take care of this today? It's like, no, future Cyrus can take care of it. Future Cyrus will be happy to wake up early and take care of this.
Oh, yeah.
And then future
Cyrus. And lose weight.
Yeah. And then future Cyrus wakes up and hates yesterday Cyrus. Like, what was yesterday Cyrus thinking?
I know. All right, future Cyrus. We just finished step 2, I believe. Let's go to step 3.
Step 4.
Step 4. Look busy. After you sit down to do some work, Open up a Word document to help yourself feel like you're being productive. Give your document a nice title, and then immediately open up Reddit, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter just to check if you missed anything. You see, it doesn't really matter what you do. As long as you're sitting on your desk and that Word document is open, it'll help trick your conscience into thinking you're doing work, but you won't be getting any further in life. Step 5, wait for opportunities. Never be proactive with finding new opportunities to grow your career or meet new people. Wait for all of that to come knocking on your door. After all, if it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen. You'll meet the girl of your dreams one day and things will kinda just work out. You'll probably also land your dream job if you just wait long enough. Anyways, the important thing is to not take action. Don't try to figure out the most effective way to get what you want. Just wait until things work out. Step 6, be default no. When a friend asks you to go out for a drink, just say no. After all, you're super busy these days and have a lot of work to do. When your boss gives you the opportunity to lead a meeting at work, try to find an excuse to slink out of it. The key here is to give everyone the impression that they should just let you do your own thing. Be so good at saying no that people just stop asking you to do anything. Step 7. Be suspicious of people. Never give people the benefit of the doubt. Believe that everyone basically just wants to take advantage of you. And because of this, you should be guarded and put up walls to protect yourself emotionally. Assume the smiles people give you are fake and that their motives are malevolent. Step 8, never...
Cyrus, I know people like this. Let me put it this way. I've known people like this who could check just about every single box.
Yeah.
You're not one of them.
I you know what? I think I used to be. A long, long time ago, you know, before I met my wife, and
that's past Cyrus.
Yeah, that is yesterday's old Cyrus. Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, Cyrus.
I bet you there are a lot of people listening who have kids in college or maybe 30 years old, and are not maybe doing much with their lives, who are nodding in appreciation for this. There's only a little bit left, so let's let it wrap up.
I'm the one. I'm definitely nodding in appreciation. And I see this in some old friends, and I see this in my children. All right.
Okay. Step 8.
Why don't you just...
Never...
Okay, there we go. No, we're good. We're good. Right.
Step 8. Never fix the things you dislike about yourself. Continue to engage in activities that make you feel subhuman and weak. Never prove to yourself that you can overcome obstacles or better yourself. Never attempt to transcend your vices or change your lifestyle for the better. Subscribe to the idea that people can't change. So you shouldn't try.
These really work. So if you want to be miserable, just follow these steps. It's
a surefire prescription for misery.
Step 9, focus on things you can't control. As often as possible, get pissed off at the traffic, the government, the pandemic. You really want to reinforce the idea that the world is messed up and there's nothing you can do about it. Focus on the shortcomings of others, the failings of your country, and the state of the economy. Maintain a constant external locus of control over all the events in your life. This will really help you feel powerless. And if you're trying to be miserable, that's perfect. Step 10, use fear as motivation. Make the fear of negative consequence your primary motivator for everything you do. Set up deadlines that frighten you and punish yourself for failing to meet them. Use white-knuckle tactics to force yourself into productivity and remind yourself constantly that your entire life could fall apart if you don't keep your head above water. Step 11, only do what is comfortable. Let your comfort zone be the authority on what you do and don't do. If it's not comfortable, don't do it. Avoid discomfort at all costs and participate only in activities that are familiar and effortless. Don't concern yourself with gaining fresh perspectives or novel experiences. Stay in your lane, operate in your wheelhouse. Step 12, believe you're special. Behave like you're entitled to things on the basis that you're just different than everyone else. Assume that the people that have what you want in life just don't deserve it as much as you do. Always regard yourself as talented, unique, one of a kind. This will really help you develop an outsider complex, which will make it difficult to open up to other people or see things from their perspective. But since you don't want to do any of that uncomfortable stuff anyways, that's perfect. Step 13, see life not as it is, but how you wish it to be. Daydream of a day where things are better. Fantasize about a life where all your problems are gone. You want to make sure you mentally escape as much as possible to distract you from the obstacles in front of you. pour your mental energy not into fixing your problems or improving yourself, but into building up this fantasy to be as detailed as possible. Reflect daily about what you would buy if you won the lottery or became a celebrity. Constantly compare your life to this fiction and become resentful at the juxtaposition. So, if suffering is what you're after and you crave the daily strife, then you're in luck. Because if you follow this advice, you'll be miserable for the rest of your life.
Yeah, fact. You know, I think he missed one. I think he missed one, Patrick. The biggest one, blame others for everything that's wrong in your life. That is a sure way to be miserable.
Because if you're never wrong, if you never do anything wrong, it's always everyone else's fault. Whatever's going on in your life.
Yeah, poor me. And if you walk around with a poor me attitude, you will be miserable.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
No, this is, I don't know who did that, but it's good. And I think it's right on target, quite frankly. And you'll post that, won't you, Cyrus?
Yeah, I'll get that up right now. It was by a guy on YouTube that he calls himself Better Ideas. And so let's give him full credit for that. He did a nice job.
That's good. Real good stuff right there. By the way, somebody came to your defense, Cyrus, just now, literally just this last moment, David in California. Dear Patrick, I felt shocked that you seemed to not know or have ever heard the surf tune Cyrus played on the air this morning, to which you reacted, meh. Well, I wasn't feigning ignorance. I really had never heard it before. So he goes on to excoriate me. Hearing that you played in a garage band in your youth and that you grew up in Southern California, I find it unbelievable that you never heard Dick Dale's Miserloo. It's a surf classic. It would be like a rock musician never having heard Louie Louie or House of the Rising Sun.
He's
granted,
not wrong.
He played bass and he's wrong. You know
he's
why?
He's not wrong.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. But here's why you're wrong, David, because I didn't play surf music. That wasn't the kind of music I was playing. So it wasn't the genre I was really listening to. Well, that's okay. I'm not defensive.
I didn't want to hurt your feelings, Patrick, but David's not the only one. There have been people here in the studio that have come popped their head in and said, that song was awesome. Too bad you can't ever play it again. So I'm feeling
a lot of negative peer pressure here.
I might bring it out again.
You might. I tell you what, I will bow to the will of the people, and I hereby permit that song to be played on the Patrick Madrid show, henceforth and forever. All right. But let's finish with what David had to say. So, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, surf classic. It would be like a rock musician, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, granted you play the bass and musicians tend to hear their own instrument first. And this song has a dominant, twangy, clean, Maserite guitar sound. You've heard of the Ventures and the Beach Boys, right? I think that's tongue in cheek. Just kidding. Good on Cyrus, though. I love that song and that sound. What does it employ? Some Middle Eastern minor scale? It's different than the regular blues R&B tonalities. I'll stop now. Thank you, David. Oh, thank you, David. I get it. I get it. I get it. But I had not heard that song before. What do the kids say, Cyrus? Sue me.
So sue me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's a great aphorism in Latin. De gustibus non disputandum est, which means roughly translated into English, there's no accounting for taste. So I just never got into surf music. I like the Beach Boys, sure, but I wasn't really like thinking about playing their music the way I was some other genres. So fair enough, David, fair enough. I hereby relinquish my opposition to that song. I bow to the will of the people. See what a benevolent ruler I am, Cyrus?
Thank you, Patrick.
I could join a junta in Latin America. I could be in a junta. Well, we actually kind of have a junta here. You know, the junta. And that would be like the merger of power in a banana republic, something like that. All right. Where are we going? We're going to the phones. That's where we're going. You thought I forgot, didn't you? You thought I forgot I was doing a radio program, didn't you, Cyrus?
Once you start talking about music, you can get a little into it.
Okay, let's get back to business. Will in Jacksonville, Florida, thank you for calling and welcome.
Hi, Patrick. It's nice to finally talk to you. I've been listening to your show for a few years, and I'm actually a bit less nervous than I expected.
Wonderful. You know why you shouldn't be nervous? Well, here's why. because it's just you and me talking together, just the two of us and a few million people listening to every word you say. So there's no reason to be at all nervous.
Thank you. I do appreciate that, Patrick. Definitely sets my nerves at ease. But I have a question on a pretty serious matter, at least in my own mind, and that would be whether or not it's morally, and I don't mean to ostracize anyone. This is an opinion that I don't want to hold as much as I do hold it, but I've fallen into the idea lately that I can't go to the Novus Ordo anymore due to certain theological reasons and in trying to protect myself from certain, I would say, malign spiritual influences.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, I think it really comes down to, I do think the ritual, and I mean, if you're considering what a ritual is, it's supposed to inform you in how to pray and how to live your life and what to believe. And because the rule of prayer is the rule of belief, lex orandi, lex credendi. So if I pray a certain way and that way in which I'm praying is defective, then I'm worried that I'll backslide into defective beliefs or moral laxity. And I believe I see that in large numbers. I'm not saying everyone who attends the Novus Ordo.
Let me interject, Will, if I may. I think I understand the point you're making. Are you saying that if you attend the new rite of the Mass, that you will somehow be plunged into immoral activity, or you'll fall into serious sin because you're attending the new rite of the Mass?
Well, that would be a bit of a non sequitur, but it's more like I wouldn't have it wouldn't lend itself to me cultivating the reverent disposition that is necessary to do good and avoid evil, and to believe good and to avoid believing evil.
Okay, I think if you're asking what I think about that, I think that, to use your phrase, it is a non sequitur, because if you think about why you're going to Mass in the first place, it's to worship God in spirit and in truth, and to receive Him in Holy Communion, if you're properly disposed to do so. And there is nothing inherent in the new rite of the Mass that would be an occasion for sin or a prompt for sin. I can say that with certitude, because although I love and greatly esteem the traditional Latin Mass, the Mass that I served as an altar boy when I was a kid, I do appreciate the new rite of the Mass, and I recognize that there are abuses and scandalous abuses at times that take place. I don't in any way deny that. But when the new rite of the Mass is celebrated properly, I think that it does have many, I mean, this is putting it lightly, I guess, but it has many important spiritual benefits that are lost if you avoid going to Mass. So I don't know if you're saying that you're going to go in search of a renegade, quote-unquote, Catholic church, an independent chapel, quote-unquote. I would advise you not to do that, because you'd be heading out the exit door of the church. I would also remind you, there's something to think about. In the dogmatic canons and decrees of the Council of Trent, in canon 13 in the session on the sacraments, and you can read this online if you want to. I've got the volume in front of me. This would be the canons on the sacraments in general. It says, if anyone says that the received and approved rites of the Catholic Church want to be used in the solemn administration of the sacraments, may be condemned or without sin be omitted by pleasure by ministers, or be changed by every pastor of the churches into other new ones, let him be anathema. So the key here is that the new rite of the Mass is the received and approved rite of the Catholic Church. Now, I'm the first one to say that I do love the traditional Latin Mass, and I don't want to see anything even approaching an abrogation of the traditional Latin Mass. We're going through a bit of a situation right now where things are tending in that direction. I think that pastorally, that's not the way to go, but I'm not a pastor in the church, so I only have my own opinion as a layman. But regardless, the church herself promulgated the new rite of the Mass. So I think what I wonder about, Will, in your case is, are you teetering on the brink of becoming a sede vacantist, God forbid, in which you would say, because you don't like the Mass, and I'm sort of putting two and two together here, because I don't like the new Mass, therefore the new Mass can't be legitimate, and if it's not legitimate, that must mean then that the church itself, or at least the leaders of the church, the popes, going back to the time of Pope John the 23rd, some sede vacantists go back even further than that, that they were not valid popes, in which case you're no longer a Catholic. You're not even a Catholic anymore. You're not even in the church anymore if you follow that trajectory, which I think is amply disprovable. So that's my concern, that if your preference is for the traditional Latin Mass, that's great. I have no problem with that. But if you're saying that you're going to absent yourself entirely from the celebration of the Mass just because you don't like it, that's wrong. And I would encourage you not to do that, not to eject yourself from the church, because that's the trajectory that you seem to be on right now based on what you said.
What if it's just distancing myself from the Novus Ordo in avoidance of perceived spiritual dangers?
Okay, well, there are people who hear voices in their head that aren't real. There are people who perceive things that are not real. And I'm here to tell you that in actual fact, there is no spiritual danger to you as a Catholic to attend the new rite of the Mass. There simply is not. Now, if somebody, because of pride or obstinacy or a poorly formed conscience, arrives at conclusions that are erroneous in an objective sense, and I think this would be an erroneous conclusion on your part, that's going to require confession and spiritual direction and further study. I mean, there are ways to ameliorate the situation, but I don't think you're seeing this clearly. I think maybe you're seeing this through the lens of those who have abandoned the church and have turned their back on the authority of the church, even at times when the authority is not wielded properly or in a pastorally sound manner. Nonetheless, the church has an authority, and we have an obligation to, you know, to in everything short of sin, of course. So if this is something that you really do believe is sinful, you'd have to substantiate that. What about this is sinful? What is it that's sinful? And that's probably where forming your conscience is going to be more important. Now, Will, I realize that I've done most of the talking here, but I have to take a break. I'm overdue for a break, if you don't mind. But I'd love to talk to you again. Catholic Answers has got a lot of good resources on this topic, and I would encourage you maybe to browse through, do some keyword searches on the search bar for the new Mass and sede vacantism and things. Those may help you to clarify your thinking. Thank you. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Have a question? give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
This is the kind of music that I was playing in bands, Cyrus. FYI, not okay. Surf music. Playing this kind of music.
I get it.
Among other things. I don't think Genesis ever did any surf music.
Okay.
I'm a product of my era, what can I say? Okay, I want to share now. We're going to go back to the phones. I've got some really good stuff for you. Some more really good stuff for you. Lila Rose, who is the president of Live Action, I have very high regard for her and the work that she does in the pro-life movement. She is la creme de la creme when it comes to an effective witness and testimony for unborn children. And that's her life's work. That's what she does, and she does it very well. So I saw, I think it was first thing this morning, I saw a video from Live Action in which Lila had gone on Dr. Phil. I think it was yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. And she is up there on the stage where, you know, Dr. Phil is and all that. And there is this woman in the audience who's permitted to sort of harangue her. I don't know if the woman, I think the woman in the audience is probably, she comes across to me as extremely angry, furious. You can see it on her face and her facial expressions and her gestures. She just exudes fury. You know, her eyes are bulging. She's gesticulating wildly. And you have to see the video to understand it more clearly. But I want you to listen to this exchange on the Dr. Phil show. And you'll hear the fury of this woman in the audience who's attacking Lila Rose. And take a listen and listen to how Lila Rose responds. And ask yourself, who is more compassionate? Who is more looking out for people? And the woman in the audience, of course, is defending the idea of abortion. And Lila Rose is taking the opposite view, as you might imagine. But just listen to that. And then when you have a chance, take a look at this on the show Twitter feed. I actually retweeted it. So if you're already on Twitter, it's at Patrick Madrid. It's at the top of the list on my Twitter feed. You can see it. But listen to this. This is about 90 seconds long. It's a clip from a larger segment in which Lila Rose does a wonderful job of speaking truth to fury.
There is nothing you could possibly say to justify that level of lack of empathy. And that's the problem I feel like in this country at the moment. We were founded on the lack of empathy, and we've just kept up with that tradition.
If
you have no empathy.
Abortion is devastating to women's mental health. No one talks about that. The year after a woman has an abortion.
What it's really like the year after a woman to have the child. What kind of trauma is that?
The trauma is from the rape. The trauma is from the rape. The child's an innocent party there.
The child isn't born yet. It's not there.
We should not take out generational
sin on a child. Pause
there,
Cyrus. Pause. I don't know if you could hear what she said. If you roll it back there, the woman in the audience who's just coming unglued. So Lila Rose says the child is an innocent victim. And the woman, she doesn't quite know what to say. She says the child is not there. Okay, if so, then what are you aborting? I think what she means is that's not a child. So just run it back 10 seconds and let's hear that again.
The trauma is from the rape. The child's an innocent party there.
The child isn't born yet. It's not there.
We should not take out generational sin on a child to say there's generational sin and that dad was an abuser, so the child should be killed. That's not fair to the child.
We're talking about rights. And he just said, a right has been taken away from us. And what is next?
I want to address that because our fundamental human right that we all share in this room is life. It's the first human right. Laws are meant to protect the weak. In a society, who's the weakest? Who's the weakest in the society? A child.
The poor.
They don't have a voice. They can't speak. A child
the
in the room.
That's
or
the weak.
But a poor child would be the weakest.
And we're going to keep them that way by
and a,
making
and a child
them
with disability. Listen,
kids.
Whether you live 10 minutes or 10 years or 100 years, you're a human life and you have the right to not be killed. And that's what the pro-life fight is all about. That's what we're fighting for, a culture of life where we provide real health care. You know, abortion is the intentional destruction of an innocent human life.
Dr. Phil.
You know,
what?
You know what was interesting?
There's
me?
Nothing he's going to add that's going to make this any better.
No, she was making
Go
a
ahead.
Good point, so he had to cut in. What I found interesting when I was editing this audio, I pulled it, and the lady in the audience, her audio is so much hotter than Lila Rose. Yeah. So they, whoever's in the control
booth,
gave
deference to her.
Made a point to give the woman in the audience a stronger
vocal deference.
That's right. Yep. So mm-hmm. I actually had to bring up Lila Rose in this,
mm-hmm.
so we could hear her more clearly.
So good.
I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but she was definitely at a lower volume than the other lady.
Well, you know how sensitive the control boards are, and you can adjust the sound minutely and make a change that way. I'm sure it wasn't accidental. Take a look at this. Share it. You'll see. You can just see it. I mean, the one side, these people are furious and irrational and vehement and all of the above. And Lila Rose, just calm, not worked up, not angry, not defensive, just speaking the truth. And I think that may be partly why they're so infuriated, because they realize that a lot of what they're working with is just sheer emotion, as opposed to things like, you know, science and facts and logic and things like that. They just won't hear it. So maybe I would recommend that you take that video, post it on Facebook, post it on Twitter. I did. Retweet it if you like it. Just retweet it if you want to, or just grab the link and share it with your friends. If you have young women in your life, your daughters, your granddaughters, let them see this. You don't even have to give them a commentary. Just, hey, I thought you might find this interesting, and then text it to the daughters and granddaughters and nieces in your life. Let them see this. They need to be exposed to this kind of thing more and more. And of course, they're just bombarded with the other side. That's all you hear is the other side. So kudos to Lila Rose. Thanks for playing that, Cyrus. Let's go to, let's go to Stella in Watsonville, California. Hello, Stella.
Hello, Patrick. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes.
Okay, so the Our Father, it seems like for Catholics at a certain point, but for some denominations, it continues to kingdom, the power, and the glory. You just, I wonder why that is.
Yeah. Well, in the Catholic Church prior to Vatican II, you would never have heard, it's called the doxology. And you never would have heard that at a Catholic Mass because it's not in the Bible. It's not part of the Our Father specifically. So when Jesus was asked by his disciples, Lord, teach us to pray, he said, when you pray, pray like this. And he gave the Our Father prayer. So that's the prayer that the Catholic Church had always said from time immemorial. And in the Latin Rite of the Catholic Church, it was known as the Pater Noster, which is the Latin for the first two words of the prayer, Our Father. Now, at Vatican II, there was an ecumenical current, a very strong one, and in some ways, I believe, misguided. And one of the things that was undertaken in the reform of the Mass was to make the Our Father at the Catholic Mass like the way many Protestants say it in their churches. And so that's where the doxology was added. It wasn't part of, certainly not part of the biblical prayer, and it wasn't traditionally part of the prayer as Catholics would say it, but it was added in. And now, you know, it's interesting. There was a time I saw it start in the late 70s, early 80s, and I think it was imported through the doorway of the Charismatic Renewal into the Catholic Church. But I noticed that suddenly, well, not suddenly maybe, but gradually, people in the late 70s and early 80s began to use hand gestures. The Lord be with you, and with your spirit, they would extend their arms out to the priest. Lift up your hearts, and they would like pantomime lifting up their hands. And then over time, when it became more and more of a thing for people to join hands when they would pray the Our Father, and the church doesn't say that you should do that. I want to get into that. But anyway, then they began to hold hands at the Our Father. And then at the doxology, for some strange reason, it seemed like they would all lift their hands up. You know, lift them up over their head, almost reflexively. And the thing to remember is all of these things, not to mention that doxology, were novel. They were added at the Vatican Council, Second Vatican Council. So it has a pedigree of maybe 60 years. You know, if you do the math, it's a little less than 60 years. Prior to that, you wouldn't have seen it. So that's the long and the short of it. That's why the Our Father, as it's prayed in the Mass, the new rite of the Mass. That's why it's longer than what you would have seen before. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Lastly, on some movies, when people are doing the sign of the cross, and then they go up, down, right, left, isn't that mm-hmm. incorrect? Okay,
no,
it's
that's
up,
not incorrect.
Down, left, right, or...
Okay, it's a custom, and the two different ways of doing it typically are between the Catholic way of doing it, so it's the forehead to the chest, to the left shoulder, to the right shoulder, and that's probably how you do it if you were raised Catholic. In the East, mm-hmm. the Orthodox believers, they do it from the right shoulder to the left shoulder. They also will hold their thumb and forefingers together when they make the sign of the cross, and that's a symbol of, among other things, it's a symbol of the Trinity. So... It's a physical reminder of our belief in the Trinity, and that's a good thing. It also, in a, maybe a secondary sense, has to do with the incarnation of Jesus. So, you know, he's one person who has two natures. He's a divine person with a divine nature, and he also has a complete human nature as well. So that gesture of the two fingers and the thumb touched together can also include that connotation as well. And that's all that is. It's just a custom. You can't make the sign of the cross the wrong way, quote unquote. If you let's say that you're a righty and you make the sign of the cross with your left hand mm-hmm. because you're holding a baby on your hip in your right hand, you make the sign of the cross with your left hand, that's just as pleasing to God as if you made it with your right hand. It's no less.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad I could be of service to you. Thank you, Stella. Well, let's take a break. Time is flying, and we're going to get back to your phone calls on the other side. The number is 888-914-9149. By the way, I've got some Peppa Pig news. You're saying what?
What?
This is the kind of music I used to play. Yeah, this kind of stuff right here.
Yeah, I'm trying to make up for that earlier mess up.
Oh, I'm feeling secure. Peppa Pig news. If you have kids or grandkids, stay tuned. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity Healthshare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor.
This is
would
good.
Would you be mine? Just
very pleasant memories mine. From watching it's Mr. Rogers. Day in this wood,
I was too old for Mr. Rogers. I didn't see it as a kid, but my kids watched the heck out of it. They loved it. I miss that guy.
I was exactly the kid that Mr. Rogers made that show for.
Did you like it when he put on his sweater and changed into his tennis shoes?
I loved everything about that guy. I thought he was amazing. Remember when...
What a far cry from Mr. Rogers' Peppa Pig is.
Exactly.
Is that why you're playing this? Because
it is, yeah. Pig? You mentioned Peppa Pig, and I started thinking about the shows I watched when I was a kid and how they influenced me, because television does influence children. Mm-hmm. And you have a story you're going to share.
Well, yeah, it's news. Thanks for the setup. Appreciate that. This is from YouTube. It's basically just telling about a new addition to the cast of Peppa Pig. Now, my grandchildren, the little guys anyway, I see them watching it, and I've stopped and looked at it. And are they like Australian pigs or New Zealand pigs or something? Because they have it sounds like an Australian accent. And,
Other than finding this clip that you're about to explain, it's the first I've ever watched Peppa Pig.
So okay, I've seen really my children, my grandchildren watch it. Okay, I've seen my grandchildren watch it. It seems benign to me, but that is changing. So let's listen.
I'm Penny Polar Bear. I live with my mummy and my other mummy. One mummy is a doctor and one mummy cooks spaghetti. I love spaghetti.
Lovely, Penny.
Oh, this just warms my heart. Listen, this is the power of the audience wanting this for so many years. And also with this being one of the most popular children's shows of all time, This is a step in the right direction.
How you feel about that? Is this a step in the right direction, Patrick?
It's normalizing it even more. This is indoctrination now. I mean, I just found out about this yesterday. So I'm going to let my adult children know about this so that they can make decisions about letting their children, my grandchildren, watch it. And here's the reason why. Because, I mean, isn't it cute? And I guess now that I listen to it, I guess they don't sound Australian. They sound British. But, I mean, it's a form of indoctrination, no doubt about it. And even a small amount can go a long way, especially when you're a little kid and you have no filters. You have no way to really measure or evaluate things that you see. You just see it. And if it's in your favorite cartoon program, you're going to, like, yeah. You're just going to assume that this is normal and good. Mummies. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. And so your kids are past the Peppa Pig stage, Cyrus. You don't have to worry about that.
Thankfully. They missed the boat on the early childhood indoctrination of same-sex couples and transgenderism that we're seeing in Peppa Pig and Blue's Clues. Fortunately, but they're getting a heavy dose of it from Disney and everything else is out right now. It's everywhere.
It is everywhere. It's intentional. This is not happening by accident. This is calculated to change the minds of your children. And if you're teaching your kids about traditional marriage and God made them male and female and all of the above, they're undoing what you're doing. Please understand that. So you as mom and you as dad, if you're not vigilant in what your kids are watching, these people are intentionally undoing what you're doing. And they're more effective at undoing it, may I say to you, than you probably are at doing it.
Fact.
No offense.
That's just the way it is.
No offense.
Yeah, it's a losing battle. I'm constantly fighting it.
Solution, if you ask me, because people are going to say, so what do you recommend? I know I'm going to sound like Mr. Wet Blanket, but what is the alternative? I would say don't let them watch it. Don't let them watch programs that will subvert the gospel, that will subvert your authentic parental role in the lives of your kids. Would you let them eat food that was laced with poison? Even if it was just 5% poison, that's all. 95% of it's great. And it tastes good, too. Boy, does it taste good. But there is that 5%, strychnine in there. Would you let your kids eat that? Of course not. What if it was just 1% poison? Would you let your kids eat the 99%? It's super good. It tastes great. But there's 1% that's poison. And if you knew about that, would you let your kid eat that? No, of course not. Because you want 0% poison. Because you're a good mother. You're a good father. You're a good grandmother. You're a good grandfather. That's all I'm saying here. And you may say, well, isn't that a bit extreme? I don't think so. And by the way, who cares if somebody looks at you like, oh, what are you, some kind of Jesus freak? You won't let your kids watch Peppa Pig? Who cares what they think? They don't have to answer to God for your children. You do. So that's why I offer you this tidbit. Because the pigs have two mummies. One's a doctor. And what's the other one?
She makes spaghetti.
And it's also cute, and it's also calculated. And may I say it one more time, they are better at undoing what you're trying to do than you are in doing it. And it's no offense to you, it's just that these people have raised subversion to a science. So just FYI, make your decisions accordingly. I have a note from Mary here, listening in Los Angeles on 93KHJ. Mary, by the way, thank you. I can't read your whole email, but she basically says, Patrick, I think you're reading a lot into this young man's question about avoiding the Novus Ordo Mass. I drive, she says, 20 miles to the traditional Latin Mass, and a mile from my home is in Novus Ordo Parish. And by the way, N-O, I think there's a certain pleasing quality to people who don't like the Novus Ordo Mass to be able to call it the N-O Mass. But I understand. I think I understand where you're coming from, Mary. And so she talks about how the Novus Ordo Mass is not reverent and it's happy clappy and there's all kinds of stuff like that. I get it. There are people in yoga pants and tank tops and flip flops and shorts, she says. So she says, I avoid the Novus Ordo Mass, but I'm not asking you about it. I'm just sharing with you that I agree with this young man. Please understand, Mary, I understand where he's coming from, and I don't think I'm at all reading too much into what he was saying to me on the phone. But it's so simple. If you are at a Novus Ordo Mass and it's all happy clappy and flip-flops and shorts, don't go to that parish. It's not that complicated. And please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying this to be rude. There are many Catholic parishes, thank God, where the Mass is celebrated reverently. And you don't find the happy clappy and the felt banners, and you don't find the flip-flops and the shorts and all that other stuff. Those parishes are there. I know they're there because, I mean, for what it's worth, for the last 35 years, I've been speaking at parishes all around the country by the hundreds, or well over 1,000, I suppose, if I had to add them all up. I know they're there. I attend a parish like that. All you have to do, if the traditional Latin Mass is not available to you, and I think in the not-too-distant future it's going to become harder and harder and harder, if not impossible in some localities, to have a traditional Latin Mass that is actually Catholic and not renegade, some quote-unquote independent chapel that's got all the smells and bells, but these are renegades. They're not even in the Catholic Church anymore. Definitely don't go down that road. But let's assume the worst, and let's assume that in the not-too-distant future, the church that you're going to 20 miles away to go to a traditional Latin Mass doesn't have that Mass anymore. You can find the new rite of the Mass celebrated properly and beautifully. And don't forget, and thank you for writing to me, Mary, I appreciate it. I just want to add one more thing. Jesus, at the Last Supper, celebrated the first Mass. And as much as I love the traditional Latin Mass, and I certainly do, it wasn't a traditional Latin Mass. The first Mass and countless Masses celebrated after that for centuries did not have the incense and the vestments and the elaborate prayers and the beautiful aesthetics. It didn't have those things, and yet it was the Mass. So I personally understand completely those who say, but the traditional Latin Mass, the prayers are more precise, they're fuller, in other words, they're not as abbreviated as the new Mass made the prayers. I understand that. I don't disagree with that. The vestments are beautiful. The priestly gestures are beautiful. There's a great deal of meaning that is present in the traditional Latin Mass that got lost in the translation when the new rite of the Mass was established in the 1960s. I don't disagree with any of those things. Aesthetically, I think the traditional Latin Mass is more aesthetically suited to raising your mind and your heart to God and the things of God. That's a personal perspective, and I think those who love the traditional Latin Mass would agree with me on this, or I with them, regardless. But don't lose sight of the fact that Jesus didn't celebrate the traditional Latin Mass. And all that is to say is that the Mass is the Mass is the Mass. And so I'm appealing to you, all of you out there, whoever you are, and the young man who called in earlier would be an example of this, don't lose hope. And by all means, don't separate yourself from the church and from the life of the church simply because the new Mass doesn't suit your aesthetic. Okay. Okay, if it doesn't suit your aesthetic, okay. There are plenty of things about the Catholic Church that don't suit my aesthetic, that's for sure. I mean, think about it. Are you Catholic because of the smells and bells? I hope not. Because if that's all that's binding you to the church is you like the aesthetic qualities of the traditional Latin Mass and you feel, you know, emotionally and spiritually nourished in a way that you don't feel if you go to the new rite of the Mass. And I'm not talking about the new rite of the Mass that has the aberrations and the abuses and the happy clappy and all that stuff. I stay far away from that stuff myself. I honestly do. It's like getting my teeth drilled. I you know, sometimes you can't avoid it. Like if I'm traveling and I have to go to Mass where I happen to be and it's that kind of a Mass, it is an ordeal for me. I don't like it, but I'm not there for the aesthetics. I'm there for Jesus. I'm there to worship God in spirit and in truth. And you may say, yeah, but there's very little of that there. Okay, okay, all right, but I'm still there at Mass, and I'm receiving Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. And I'm willing to sit in the dentist chair, liturgically speaking, and have my teeth drilled, liturgically speaking, for an hour at one of those kind of parishes. If that's what I have to do, I'm willing to do that because I'm not there for the aesthetics. I'm there for Jesus. I wondered when you were going to fire. Oh, please. Oh, my gosh. Oh. That's like the worst liturgical music right there. So this is an important topic, so thank you for indulging me for a moment on this issue. I just want to appeal to you, whoever you are. I'm right there with you if you're saying, I don't find myself nourished and you know spiritually edified if I go to the new rite of the Mass the way I do if I go to the traditional Lent Mass. That's okay. But don't allow that to sever you not only from the life of grace in the sacraments, but also, God forbid, from the church itself, if you should go down that road, as many have done, sad to say. The Mass is the Mass is the Mass. It can be celebrated in more beautiful ways or less beautiful ways. It can be, as long as it's celebrated validly, it can be celebrated in ways that are edifying, in ways that are uplifting to you, and that's where I would gravitate 100 times out of 100. That's where I would go, if I can. But if you can't, this idea that you're somehow committing a sin by going to the new rite of the Mass, that is wrong. It's just wrong. And it's not wrong because I think it's wrong. It's wrong because the Mass is the Mass is the Mass when it's validly celebrated. Go where you can, when you can. But don't say, well, that's it. I can't go to a Mass that I personally prefer. Therefore, I'm not going to go to Mass at all. Don't make that mistake, please. I'll be right back.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.